This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Big tech companies are now warning that Ottawa's proposed lawful access bill could force some services out of Canada. The concern is over encryption strength. Apple and Meta have said the legislation could create backdoors into encrypted systems, while Signal and NordVPN have threatened to leave the Canadian market altogether. Civil liberties advocates argue the bill would vastly expand surveillance powers for police and intelligence agencies.
Over the past week, the concerns over Bill C-22, the government's lawful access bill, continued to mount. Now, part of this has to do with the government's, frankly, incoherent response, which has included Justice Minister Sean Fraser implausibly comparing metadata to phone book data, and Public Safety Minister Gary Annedesangri suggesting that Canada was just trying to match U.S. metadata retention laws when the U.S. has no such law, and claiming that tech company concerns regarding breaking encryption was based on misinformation. It's the tech company reaction that's the focus of this episode. Many companies, Apple, Google, Meta, Signal, and DuckDuckGo, have spoken out against the bill. So too has the VPN sector, with some warning that they can't remain in Canada if the bill goes ahead as is. This week, the CEOs of two of the companies that have spoken out against Bill C-22 joined the podcast to explain. I'm pleased to be joined by Avery Penneron, the CEO of Tailscale, and Yegor Sack, the CEO of Windscribe. Avery and Yegor, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hi there.
Welcome. It's great to have you both. You know, Avery, why don't we start with you? The word VPN can sometimes be a bit misleading. And Tailscale, which has spoken out on Bill C-22, has a post on the bill that explicitly says that Tailscale is not an anonymity service. You know, before we get to the bill and some of the issues there, can you walk listeners through what your company actually is, who uses it, what data the product engages with, and what you do or don't have access to?
Sure. So I think in the context of the bill, the easiest way to explain Tailscale is it's a VPN. But there are two kinds of VPNs, and not everybody understands that. There's corporate VPNs that companies and employees at companies use to interconnect the devices and data inside that company. And then there's consumer VPNs that are used for privacy and anonymity when browsing the internet. So if you've seen ads on YouTube channels or whatever, a lot of the time, those are going to be consumer VPNs because they're selling to the consumer market. That's specifically designed so that you can browse the web and not be traceable, right? Tailscale is a little bit different. It's an end-to-end encrypted service, but it is for your own internal stuff, right? And so we mostly provide services like, you know, we have lots and lots of free users around the world that are using it for accessing like their Raspberry Pi at home when they're not at home and they're using their phone or something like that, right? And so the metadata about what you're doing on Tailscale is not as sensitive as it is with a consumer VPN, because the fact is you're accessing your own stuff, right? And that's like, you know, it's more important for us to have that information so we can help you debug why that's not working right now than it is to try to keep that anonymous. So that puts us in a little bit of a different category than other VPNs.
So Yegor, Windscribe is much closer to, I think, what most listeners think of when they hear VPN. You've said publicly that you've received some RCMP requests and responded that you have nothing to give them because the product doesn't keep IP logs. Can you tell us a bit about how the architecture works and why for you, maybe for many VPNs, no logs isn't a marketing slogan, but really a design constraint?
Yeah. So, I mean, fundamentally, you know, VPNs, at least privacy VPNs, are a trust shift service. You know, you don't trust your internet service provider or that shady Wi-Fi that you might be on, which ironically something Public Safety Canada recently suggested, hey, you should use a VPN on Wi-Fi, all while, you know, attempting to pass laws like this. But ultimately, you shift your trust because you do have to trust someone in the end, right? And when you pick a VPN provider, transparency and you know, the way that it operates is very important, because why would you shift your trust to an entity that's going to store your activities? Because that's exactly where you're trying to avoid, right? So with that kind of mind, we built, you know, the system was built with no logging by default, right? And in a sense that, like, why do we want to build it this way? Well, I mean, there's multiple reasons. You know, if we store all the information that we, you know, from users' activities, ultimately, then we can no longer say, hey, we don't have this data to local law enforcement, but also foreign law enforcement, right? Because at that point, you know, we'd be lying because we have this information. And, you know, what comes with foreign law enforcement, you know, laws in different countries can differ significantly. And in the case of a clear crime, hey, this person did terroristic things or whatever, threatened to blow up an airport, that's clearly a crime. But when it comes to, like, hey, this person said something mean about the government, or maybe they're an activist of some kind and now we want to jail them, they would send us subpoenas, you know, and through MLAT, you know, a lot of these can be enforced in Canada as well. And, you know, Canada has MLAT with a whole bunch of countries, some of them friendly, some of them not, right? So we don't want to be stuck in this position where now we're helping jail activists in some other country, right? So that's probably the main reason why we do not store any logs.
You know, the Tailscale post that we made reference to a moment ago makes the point that the bill's electronic service provider definition is sweeping. I want to ask both of you questions. Avery, why does the scope matter so much here? And Igor, how do you read whether Windscribe sits within the scope of this legislation?
Well, the scope is really important in this context. We talk about the concept of an electronic service provider, right? And it's like, it's so vaguely defined that it's not just VPNs, it's every single company that might provide a service on the internet, because it's electronic, it's a service, and they're providing it, right? And it's like, that is, I don't think it's what was actually intended by the writers of the bill, but it doesn't matter what they intended, it matters what they wrote, right? And so, like, anybody who operates anything could actually accidentally get scooped into this, right? It's kind of, you know, Tailscale as a VPN provider, as a network connectivity provider, that it happens to be an overlay network on top of the physical network, but it kind of makes some sense. Like, I can see a metaphor between Tailscale and, like, old school wiretapping at a phone company, right? Like, maybe there's something to be said for that. It's not the case for, like, some random photo sharing service online, right? That is not an interconnection service. It's just the service, right? And you shouldn't have the same laws applying to both kinds of things.
Well, yeah, if you read the actual law, like, electronic service provider essentially covers every single business in Canada, provided that they use the internet in some way, and every single business does. So therefore, everyone is in scope. It's not just the telcos. It's not just the communication providers. You know, it could be a mom and pop shop that happens to send emails to suppliers. Ultimately, they are in scope. And this definition is extremely broad. And, you know, unlike the Australian law that arguably this C22 was kind of inspired by, at least that law kind of has a way more narrow definition in terms of, hey, this is primarily for communications providers. There's no such definition in the given wording of C22 as it stands right now. And what it essentially entails is they're going to force everyone to become Palantir. And most businesses were founded to do a very specific thing and not be Palantir. And at this point, we're all forced to become a data collection arm for the government through a secret order that you cannot talk about.
You know, I think it's notable that the government's response, especially as we record this over the past week, has been that the critics are misreading the bill. And, you know, they've suggested that there is no backdoor mandate, that warrants are still required. Igor, you know, you've obviously read some of these provisions because you've made a business decision on them and you've talked about some of these issues. What do you read in there that the government says isn't there? You know, when you talk about this is the sort of thing that we can't operate here, what are you seeing that the government is saying isn't there?
Right. I mean, from our perspective, you know, there's no clear definition of, you know, what is data and what is metadata? Because in our specific case, metadata is the data that users put through our servers because it's already encrypted, you know, outside of our realm of control, you know, through HTTPS, right? So the metadata that is generated by them using our service is that's our definition of actual data. And that's the thing that we literally do not want to possess for reasons mentioned earlier. And most of this information is not even accessible to us in the way that the system was designed to operate to begin with, right? So in order to abide by this law, it basically requires a complete and fundamental redesign of the service, right? To give you an analogy, I don't know, it would be like forcing a vegan restaurant to install a slaughterhouse in the back just in case someone from the government may want to visit at some point. But as you may realize, you know, typical customers of a vegan restaurant, when they learn that there's a slaughterhouse in the back, they're not going to go to that restaurant anymore because it becomes an entirely different thing.
Avery, your post includes a line that I think is worth quoting. You note that the safest database is the one that you never created. Can you talk a little bit about that? And, you know, how do you respond to someone that says, well, listen, providers are retaining operational data anyway, so what's one more category of retention in this case for up to a year? You know, what's the security engineering case that's raised by virtue of this sort of retention of metadata for a year or more?
Yeah, it's a pretty serious requirement. Companies like Tailscale and most tech companies nowadays have to think really, really carefully about exactly what data they retain and exactly what they do with it. Partly because in Europe, they've got the GDPR, which is a privacy act that absolutely insists you don't retain anything you don't absolutely need to retain for any longer than you absolutely need to, except to operate your service. Right. And it's really strict. And so we are in a situation where like the Canadian regulation that comes in might be in direct opposition to that. And like as a company who's like, you know, an electronic service provider, right, we might be in a situation where we can't actually comply with both laws at the same time. And if that happens, we have to either like drop our European clients or find out some way to move Tailscale out of Canada or part of Tailscale out of Canada so that we don't have to service them from Canada. Right. And that's bad for everybody because it's not actually the case that this law needs to do that. That's not the intention. It's just an accident.
You may have answered this already, Igor, with your prior reference, but let's drill down for just a second again on the metadata retention question. Because the government has talked about potentially addressing through some amendments on the encryption side, but on metadata, they've really taken a stand saying, no, this is what we're going to do. From your perspective, it isn't incremental, though, I think, right? Because you're logging identifying data, or you're not running the product that you sell. Because if you're logging this, then that's not what a VPN does. You know, is there an architectural workaround that allows a no logs VPN to comply with a retention mandate, or is this your example of the vegan restaurant, and there really is no middle ground here that's available to you?
No, honestly, it is pretty binary, which is why, like, you know, the duration of the collection to at least for us doesn't really matter. It could be store this data for an hour or for 100 years. Ultimately, that part is less relevant. It's just the system that needs to be built specifically for collection of metadata. That's the deal breaker here for us, right? Once the system is built, and you know, building such a system is also, you know, no trivial matter when you design a service to not operate in this way from day one. So that has, you know, obviously financial implications. Now you have to build this thing that has nothing to do with your business use case. You have to retask people. You have to think about this thing that literally does not help you operate a service, does not help the end users in any way. You have to do it on your own dime. You have to do it on the government schedule. There's no workaround here for a service like ours. You either do it or you don't.
Avery, you know, beyond retention, one of the big focal points, of course, has been the requirements for providers to develop, test, and maintain technical capabilities for government access. That's where we've seen sort of the rubber hit the road for a lot of companies focused on encryption, systemic vulnerabilities. We've had the minister talk about misinformation coming from the companies as their response, but we've now had the RCMP actually quite directly tell a committee that no, we like backdoors and encryption access if we can get it. So seems like the government and the police are having a little bit hard time getting their story straight. Now, your post calls for explicit protection of encryption and secure architecture. You're certainly not the only one, but you're certainly one of the first to be vocal about it. Can you talk a bit about why
you see that as so essential?
Well, this is really important, right? I mean, TailScale, it's a VPN. One of the things we do is security, right? And we hire some of the best security people in the world to make sure that our system doesn't have any holes in it. Historically, law enforcement and government systems don't have that same bar, right? And the problem with security is like we like compare it to a chain, and the weakest link in the chain is how strong your chain is, right? We are talking about a regulation that, in a very hand-wavy, non-specific way, says like maybe we're going to require you to put in specific stuff that lets us access your systems, right? And that, you know, that makes sense. You imagine like the olden days with like literally analog telephone, where like when they, what they mean is we're going to put a tape recorder and somebody's going to go into the office and they're going to clip the tape recorder to a literal wire that is literally the phone cable that goes to somebody's house. And it's like, okay, I understand that. It's pretty hard to misunderstand how this works, to misuse it for learn, to be like an unexpected vulnerability in the system, right? Software is not like that at all, right? Like this, these systems are so complicated. The chance that like the RCMP is going to come up with some system that is secure enough that when they force us to plug it into TailScale, the system is not going to be less secure overall, is basically zero. And there's lots of history of this happening already in the world, right? The US had a system like that, and it immediately got used by China and Russia, right, to get into the systems the FBI was supposed to be using, right? If the US can't do it, like, I'm sorry, but Canada can't do it either. We really should not ever go down that path. It's too dangerous.
Yeah. So this is this proverbial, if you let the good guys in, then the bad guys are going to find a way to access it as well. That you, that it's just, there's no way to limit it just to police.
I'm going
to
install, you know, the front door has this gigantic like gate on it that's like impossible, impenetrable. And I'm going to install a little back gate, and it's going to have a normal key that any locksmith can get through. Right. And it's like, don't worry, I'm only giving the key to the Canadian law enforcement. It's like, yeah, it's not the key that's the problem. It's the fact that you put in this gate that uses the regular lock. Right. Yeah.
No, I'm glad you've been raising it. And certainly we've seen many other companies, whether it's penetrating it with the government, I suppose, remains to be seen. Now, you mentioned the GDPR and how European customers might react. I actually wanted to focus both on your company as well as Windscribe. They're both Canadian-founded companies that sell internationally with really security guarantees. You know, what are some of your thoughts on the signal that Canadian law is sending if it requires some of these changes? You know, what, you know, how is the rest of the world going to react, either with respect to either buying Canadian services or potentially investing in Canada? Avery, why don't we start with you?
So I think Canada is in a really actually strong position right now with all of the trade wars and whatnot that are going on. Like, we are basically everybody's friend still, right? And it's really, we're maybe the only country in the world that is everybody's friend still, right? And that is like amazingly good for business. It is a great reason to have my business based in Canada, because I can sell things to Europeans, I can sell things to Americans, I can sell things to Canadians, I can sell things to Koreans. Like, it's wonderful to have like the perfect balance. And Canada is traditionally extremely good at coming up with that perfect balance where we don't have to offend people. It's like, it's really, this is a great time to lean into our strengths, being non-offensive, right? Because that is a great way to build business where, like, you know, the Europeans, they talk about like, I want to have a sovereign AI strategy. And then I talk to the people who are doing it and I say, well, what about Canada? They're like, oh, Canada's okay. You're basically European, right? And then I go to US, it's like, oh, we want to have a sovereign AI strategy. We run all the stuff. And we're like, okay, but what about Canada? They're like, oh, that's okay. You're basically American, right? And it is amazingly powerful to be in that state. But if we create regulations that unalign us from some of our partners that are going to make us like in conflict, where like our law enforcement is going to be looking at the data that belongs to non-Canadian citizens, for example, because we have two wide sweeping laws, that's going to get us in trouble, and it's going to make people not want to work with Canadian technology. And that is kind of my worst nightmare.
Well, I mean, the Canadian market, I mean, like if you look at global scales, is not a massive one, you know, relative to all the other places that exist in the world. Even for us, even though we're based in Canada, but the Canadian revenues are, you know, single digit percentages of our total, even though we're primarily based in Canada. And back when we opened Windscribe back in 2015, after doing some legal research, you know, Canada seemed like a great jurisdiction because it had a mature legal system, there were privacy protection laws, So I was like, hey, yeah, and we're here. It's nice, convenient. We're here. We're going to open a company here. It has good laws. But unfortunately, the signal kind of creates the opposite signal. You know, it introduces unreasonable requirements with real costs and criminal liability for businesses to actually operate in this country, whether they're based here or not. And, you know, many companies would be might choose like, hey, you know what? I think we'll just skip the Canadian market entirely.
From Yegor, that Windscale may not be able to stay in the country if this passes as is. Your post talked about specific amendments that didn't necessarily threaten exit. Can you talk a bit about what that impact might ultimately be if this passes in its current form? Does this mean exiting the country? Does it mean exiting certain services? How do you envision trying to deal with legislation that at least at the moment could include both the prospect of both backdoors and access to encryption, as well as the metadata retention requirements?
So I'm a very Canadian person. I grew up in Northern Ontario. I don't really like ultimatums. I find that it's like they can weaken discussions rather than strengthen discussions, right? So when I come at it, I'm like, look, if in all honesty, I don't expect the bill to pass the way it was written, right? I think people want to be here making a good bill that is going to be good for everybody, right? So I mostly don't have to think about what's going to happen if they pass a bad bill, because Canada generally doesn't, right? We've had a long series of these discussions and we come to good conclusions. We make good systems that, again, like makes us a really great partner to every country in the world, right? And so I don't worry about it that much. Now, if I'm honest, if I was Windscribe, I'd be like, look, you know, in all honesty, Windscribe cannot operate if you ruin their promise of anonymity, right? Like they're an anonymizing privacy VPN. And if you break the anonymity, you've broken the entire product, right? Same thing with Signal. Like Signal can't operate in Canada. I completely understand. Like this is not them just making idle threats. Like they have to, in order to protect their reputation, they would have to stop operating in Canada under these circumstances. Tailscale is not the same. Right? Tailscale, there's, you know, it's corporations using Tailscale for their internal corporate communications, right? And so we would have to think about, you know, what's best for our customers and what our customers are willing to put up with. Again, in Europe, they've got laws that specifically would prevent this kind of thing. We would have to find some way of operating that would let our European customers not use Canadian employees, not use Canadian hosting services. There would be a lot of business, like money that could be flowing into Canada that would not be allowed to flow into Canada, right? We'd have to go do it somewhere else, right? And the profits would go elsewhere. And I don't know exactly what the corporate structure would have to look like. But again, I'm not thinking that far ahead, because I don't think they're going to actually do this, because I think nobody, it's the thing about this bill is it's just kind of vague and sloppy. It's not like anybody's trying to overreach. They didn't understand the issues and they haven't finished doing their homework yet. And I'm pretty sure they're going to finish doing their homework.
All right. I like the optimism. I can't say that I'm quite as optimistic, but I'm glad that you are. And I'm also glad that you raised in particular this issue, not so much of leaving, but what the impact is with potential conflict of laws, because we haven't heard that much about that issue and that notion that this may be incompatible with some of your obligations for operations in other jurisdictions, let's say in the EU, is something that hasn't got a lot of attention. I'm certainly glad you raised it. Igor, you noted that Signal, the messaging service, can shut off Canadian servers because it isn't headquartered here. But as you've said, you are. Can you talk about how you got to the point where you basically would say, well, we're going to have to leave here? And are there amendments that would save this? Or is it, as you've been saying, if there are requirements to preserve something like metadata or risks on the encryption side, there really isn't tinkering that's going to solve this. This is just sort of an operational go or no go in terms of remaining in Canada.
Yeah, no, for us, it's not a preference. You know, if the bill is passed in its current shape and form, we cannot operate out of Canada because the entire point of the service is defeated, right? So, I mean, the moving part is extra tricky because there's many ways to do it. There's massive tax implications for, you know, emigrating a company outside of the country. You know, corporate continuance is probably the only move at this point. That being said, you know, we would very much like to stay in Canada, where we've been operating for 10 years. But you know, this bill would have to change significantly. And at the very least, what we want, what we would ideally want to see, well, ideally is for it to be just discarded and never talked about again. But you know, the next best thing would be, you know, removal of mandatory metadata retention, you know, explicit encryption protections, narrower core providers definition, removal of secret gag orders, and back to the higher standard of reason to believe as opposed to reason to suspect.
Listen, Avery and Igor, you know, you've been great really walking through the implications for both of your companies. Why don't we close with this? If there's one thing that each of you would want a Canadian listener to take away, whether that's a message they should send to their member of parliament or something they should be thinking about with regard to what's really at stake with respect to lawful access right now, you know, what would it be?
You definitely need to raise the alarm, because ultimately this bill actually will make everything less secure and Canadians less safe, because creation of these massive databases that will store very personal information, and companies that have no business having that information and they never wanted to have it or collect it in the first place are not going to be forced to have this massive cache of personal data. That's like that's prime for the taking, not just by the government with a legal court order for that particular record, as the government leads you to believe. Now it's an attractive target for foreign governments. You know, we've seen some of this with the SALT tycoon attacks, which literally penetrated, you know, telco networks and used the existing interception capabilities that were built in specifically for law enforcement and abused them to spy on people and extract vast amounts of information from these networks, right? And we don't want the same thing happening here. So forcing companies to store more than is palatable to them already and forcing them to store this for long periods of time does not make Canadians safer. It makes them more vulnerable.
I hope I'm not too optimistic, but I do think, you know, in comparison to, say, the US, where people write to their congressmen all the time and they don't really expect anything will happen. Like in Canada, it's a smaller place, and I think people listen. I think you know, it does matter what you say to your MP about this. And I think it does matter that we're having this conversation. And I think it does matter that our government is actually trying to do something that's good for everybody. This is not some like crazy overreach from some lobbyist who's like out of control that we can't stop. This is just a bunch of people trying to do a good job, right? And we can do a good job, and it can actually be really good for Canada instead of bad for Canada, but we have to do it correctly.
Both of you have been really outspoken on this issue. I think it takes a certain amount of courage for companies to really get out there and be upfront about the concerns with legislation in this way. And I think that both of you in many ways sort of led from the front, and we've seen others follow, which has been great. So thank you both for your leadership on this issue in terms of raising awareness and for joining me here on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I think you've done a lot more to raise awareness than either of us here.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod, or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca, or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.